flocks of flamingos at 15,000 feet might make you feel like a bit of an alien visitor when you climb to the high deserts of northern Chile. Coming up, journalist Mark Johansson takes us wandering in the Atacama for breathtaking adventures under the clearest skies on Earth. And we're overdue for a check-in with our listeners, so we'll hear about your travel adventures and help you plan for more. We'll start today's travel with Rick Steves, looking for castles in Scotland. Scotland's majestic landscape seems custom-made for castles. Whether perched atop a craggy cliff, nestled in lush glens, or reflected in tranquil lochs, Scotland's castles are where history, legend, and rugged beauty all come together. Today I'm joined by two Scottish guides to help us get the most out of Scotland's most worthwhile castle visits. Liz Lister and Helen Houston are the co-hosts of Scottish Blethers. That's a podcast. And they've been guiding in and around their native Scotland now for nearly 30 years. Helen and Liz, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Liz. Nice to be here.
Scottish castles, it's just a very important part of a visit to Scotland. When you drive around, they just catch your eye. There's so many dramatically situated castles, and so many great cities are built in the shadow of a mighty castle. When we think about Scottish castles, Liz, are they mostly remnants of British imperialism, like you see in Wales, or do they relate more to the clan system, and are they indigenous Scottish?
I think that they're certainly indigenous Scottish. I mean, there are so many of them. At one point, there was up to 3,000, which is about one for every 100 square miles in Scotland. So initially, they were primarily defensive, but latterly, they would become, the English would become the common enemy. But to begin with, it was more your neighbour. You were defending your lands from your neighbour. Up in the Highlands, you've got the clan system, but there were also big families down in the borders in the lowland areas. And so equally, you needed some sort of defensive structure where you could pull yourself into a stone building, pull up the drawbridge and hold out under siege.
Was this before there was an effective central government?
Yes. And then you got to the stage where kings and monarchs would reward loyal servants by granting them land on which they would build a castle. But the castle wouldn't be what it looks like today. It would just be a very simple tower house, a defensive structure. And right. There's a good saying which says, a sharp dagger needs no decoration. You know, they didn't need all the status that you see in today's castles. They just needed to provide defense.
Helen, when I go to a castle in Scotland, up in the Highlands especially, I feel like it's sort of the capital of a clan. It's almost like the political and spiritual capital of what was a feudal domain, like a clan. Can you tell me a little bit about how the clan system related to these castles and what's the importance of a castle for the Campbells or the MacDonalds or whatever big Scottish powerful clan?
Yes, that certainly was the idea, that the castle would be the chief's main residence. And we've got today Inverary Castle, which is the residence of the Duke of Argyll, who is chief of the Clan Campbell. And you've got the Dunvegan Castle on Skye, which is the chief of the Clan MacLeods of Skye, her castle or his castle. So they still is. Down in the Highlands, yes, it was very much the main domain. And the chief had the land all around, and he would then allocate portions of that land to his clan members. And they would get a portion and they would pay back the rent in partly in sort of, you know, money terms, but mainly in kind, where they would give produce from the land or they would also turn out for the chief. Wherever the chief decided he was going to fight, whoever he was going to fight, he could guarantee, you know, 25, 55, 205 men, depending how many people, clan members he had, that he was allocating land to.
Liz Lister and Helen Houston are helping us explore the castles of Scotland right now on Travel with Rick Steves. They also host occasional podcast conversations to help you explore Scotland. It's at Scottish Blethers. What are a couple of the best castle interiors to visit, where you see more than just architecture, but you see like a museum for that whole clan's story?
One of the castles that I think you can see really well how people lived and how people still live is Cawdor Castle outside Inverness, because the Dowager Countess still lives in that castle during the winter hours, the winter days, and she is there during the summer working away in the tea room, showing people round. So that's one that you really can see. And there's a little print by Salvador Dali on one of the walls, and her television is hidden behind a screen, you know, or a cupboard on another wall. So you just know that this is a lived-in castle.
Yeah.
But the other castles that I really have to put my hands up and say, I just love Stirling Castle. It's not a clan castle. It's a defensive castle, one of the oldest castles in Scotland. And I grew up, my bedroom window looked out over Stirling Castle. So I grew up in the shadow of that. And what they did when the army marched out of Stirling in 1964, they decided to do the research and refurbish the main rooms of Stirling Castle, the palace, the Great Hall, the chapel, as they would have looked when they were first built in the 1400s, 1500s or 1600s. And they are such a good visit. You can learn a lot.
I always think of Stirling Castle and Edinburgh Castle as similar. They're both on rocks. They're both very historic. And they're also different than a clan castle.
Yes.
Liz, how are these different than a clan castle that we were talking about before?
Well, it wasn't a clan, it was royalty. So royalty. Stirling Castle that Helen's been talking about, that was during the Stuart era. So people have probably heard of Mary, Queen of Scots, and her son, James VI of Scotland, who united the thrones of Scotland and England. But her father, James V, and her grandfather, James IV, all of them built their own particular buildings in Stirling Castle. So it was royalty. And Edinburgh Castle, it was the same. Although at Edinburgh, they had Holyrood Palace. And if you've ever visited Edinburgh Castle, you'll know that it's pretty windy up there. And we can get this fierce sea mist that blows in off the Firth of Forth called a har. There's another Scottish word for you. So it's said that the monarchs didn't like to live up in Edinburgh Castle. They just went there in times of threat. They preferred the much more sumptuous accommodation down at Holyrood Palace.
But both Stirling Castle and Edinburgh Castle are like museums. If you're interested in the royal history of Scotland, those are two must-see castles. We're taking a look at some of Scotland's best castle experiences today on Travel with Rick Steves. And to help us, I'm joined by Scottish tour guides Helen Houston and Liz Lister. I'd like to talk from a sightseeing point of view about some of the dramatic castles that, as you're driving around, you'll see these castles, and they're just, if you were a painter, you'd screech to a halt and set up your easel and paint that image. Helen, when you're taking a group around Scotland, what's one of the best photo op castles that you can remember?
I think one of them, just off the east coast, south of Aberdeen, is Dunottar Castle. And that is sitting almost on a stack out from the cliffs. It's a beautiful castle, just absolutely lovely. And you can visit it, and it's a ruin, but lots of stories. That was where they hid the crown jewels, the honours of Scotland, during Oliver Cromwell's time. And when he was, or his troops were coming to it, they dropped the honours of Scotland out of the castle down to the seashore, where the minister's wife was collecting seashells and seafood. She picked them up and took them to her husband's church and hid them under the floorboards in Kenneth Church. And that is why the honours of Scotland, the crown jewels of Scotland, are the second oldest in Europe, older than the ones in London.
It's so great to know the stories behind all of these great slices of Scottish culture. Liz, for you, what is a beautiful photo op castle?
Well, the prime photo op is the one that's on all the shortbread tins, which is Ealandonan Castle, which is on a promontory just before you cross over the bridge into Skye. So it has the beautiful setting where three lochs all merge together, and you've got coolins and just the beautiful scenery of Ealandonan. It's probably the most photogenic.
But Ealandonan.
Ealan, which is Gaelic for island, Donan.
And if you're going to Skye, as many of us will, you drive across a bridge, and just before you leave the mainland, on the left, you'll find that castle. It's so beautiful. Hey, we're out of time, but I'd like to just let each of you share one unforgettable surprise extra that comes with a castle. For instance, Urquhart on Loch Ness is where people stop to see if they can find the Loch Ness monster from the lookout tower in that castle. What I also like there is there's an old catapult, and you get to actually see that medieval weapon. What's one surprise, sort of unforgettable extra that you can enjoy in a castle in Scotland? Helen?
Right. Well, I would say, and I'll go back to my favourite one, Stirling Castle. Just looking out over the walls of Stirling Castle, seeing right over what we call the carse, that's the low-lying ground by the river. Just looking out over the carse, and you're looking down on the King's Knot, which K-N-O-T, which is a beautiful landscaped piece of ground, which they're not quite sure what it was. You think it might have been a formal garden laid out by James VI, or it may well have been some sort of tiered seating for watching the boys and their toys, the men jousting in the haining just alongside it. Just wonderful things, looking right over to Ben Lomond, and one or two more of the crag and tail features, which are the sort of the slope and the kind of wedge of cheese type rock formations dotted around Scotland.
And Liz, what would your surprise extra in a castle be?
Well, I think no self-respecting castle would be without a ghost. So, you know, as you walk around a castle, you're looking for that shivery feeling, the cold air around about you. And the most haunted of all of the castles in Scotland is said to be Glam's Castle, which has no less than 6 ghosts, which are reputed to haunt it. One of them was a poor little page boy who was always getting into mischief. And so instead of the naughty step, he was sent to the stone outside in the cold to sit, and they forgot about him. And he sat there on a freezing night and turned to ice and died. So he said to still be mischievous, and he trips up visitors as they're walking around the castle. So if you trip
that sounds so good. Hey, you guys, I can see why your podcast, Scottish Blethers, is such a hit. And I'd like to thank both of you, Helen Houston and Liz Lister, for joining us today and bringing a little bit of the joy and the richness of your culture to our audience. Happy travels, and thanks a lot.
Thanks, Rick.
Thank you, Rick. Thank you.
Liz Lister explains how some castles in Scotland function as the spiritual heart of a family clan. It's in an extra that you'll find with this week's show at ricksteves.com/radio. Bring along your eye drops as we head next for Mars on Earth in the high and dry Atacama Desert of Chile. It's Travel with Rick Steves.